From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 28th day of October, 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Naomi Bloom. She's at TotalFarmMarketing.com out of West Bend, Wisconsin. Brittany Goodrich will be her ag economist from the Farm Dog team and the University of Illinois to discuss insurance, federally subsidized insurance, for beekeepers, including hobbyists. You want to stay with us for that one. And as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at Hurricane Melissa with Don Day and what the weather forecast looks like here in the Corn Belt and in South America on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Naomi Bloom from TotalFarmMarketing.com now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Hello, Naomi. Thanks for being with us. I bet you have just had a ball over the last several days working through everything that's been happening on the world marketplace as the president has been traveling. And there have been developments on the beef side with Argentina, with Colombia, with Japan, things that could happen with China. What's top of your mind that's most important for today, Tuesday, the 28th day of October?
Well, all of it's important, and I don't think one particular thing is standing out. It just feels like we're juggling more and more and more balls into the air, and I'm at the point where I'm like, at what point does the market just drop all of them, or can we keep the juggling occurring for the rest of the week? Of course, we've got a lot of little trade deals going on behind the scenes, and then the potential for some better news with China later in the week, but specifically, we're still looking for a specific amount of number of soybeans that China may have purchased or is planning to purchase. And so that's the big question mark on the grain side. And we also know that at any time, President Trump or President Xi could just walk away from the deal and say, forget it, and then prices could come crashing back down lower. So we're balancing a lot fundamentally. We're balancing a lot technically. We're also seeing the funds exit short positions with some gusto. Like yesterday, the funds bought back 20,000 contracts of soybeans and bought back 11,000 contracts of corn and bought back over 5,000 contracts of Chicago wheat. So there is a lot going on. There's a lot of moving parts, and the week is not over yet, friends. It's only Tuesday.
Well, I do want to know about Tuesday because there was follow-through buying today, and at some point, it appears to have petered out. What happened?
Well, there were a couple of things that happened. Over the news wire, there was a report of an opinion that the Trump, the U.S. and China trade deal wasn't going to go through, and so that spooked some profit-taking. So we did see from our highs earlier in the day, a little bit of profit taking, almost a turnaround Tuesday, but grains were able to hang in there and stay positive. But from a technical perspective, the wheat got close to the 100-day moving average, corn got close up to the 200-day moving average, and for corn, every nickel increment is another resistance area. So it's just cautiously climbing higher, but very, very aware of not going too much higher while we're still waiting on final yield numbers and USDA reports that'll be hopefully coming up here in the future. But it was just a headline that came across from my perspective that someone had the opinion that the trade deal maybe wasn't going to get done.
So the marketplace being driven by headlines, things that are not exactly fundamentals at this time. So it's a buy the rumor, sell the fact kind of function, potentially. That's usually how it is put in the marketplace. By the time we get to any announcement, which would come Thursday or I suppose maybe later in the week, what do you think the marketplace will be looking at?
Well, we're going to be looking for the specific number of beans. That's the reality. So if China says that they're going to buy 10 million metric tons of U.S. beans to meet that December-January need, that's about 360 million bushels, and that is only still half of what China would normally buy from us. So that may be viewed, to your point, as buy the rumor, sell the fact, that, of course, welcome news, totally welcome news, but compared to where we were with them, not enough. Now, if they come up with a number more than that, then I think that'll be continued to be friendly towards the market, and we could see some additional technical buying because of that. And then we'll start to go back to keeping an eye on where we all think the yields are going to end up with this marketplace, along with looking at the domestic demand for corn and beans both.
So how is it that you think farmers should consider this week and all the news that's coming in? They're in the market, clearly, because they've got harvest happening or grain in the bin or storage at the elevator, one of the two. But do they step aside? Do they make some kind of adjustments in their marketing? What do you think?
Well, with the soybean rally that we've had here, it's been nearly a dollar in just 2 weeks for soybeans. And so if you are now at the point where you're going to be looking to make some sales, reward the rally. I mean, it's been a dollar rally higher. And then now also, I mean, from a technical perspective, it does look like maybe it could go higher yet. However, if this trade deal doesn't happen, or if we have a buy the rumor, sell the fact mentality, the market could easily erode 50 cents quickly. So you might want to consider, and we had a few folks today call and ask about buying some just short-term soybean puts. The December cereal options are available now. They're good for just a few weeks. But just to cover unpriced bushels in case you're wanting to store them, but now we've got this dollar rally to protect. So that might be something to consider as well. But in general, we're keeping an eye on basis levels, which at the Gulf had improved a little bit this week, but overall throughout the Midwest, it's a mixed bag. If a place was deficit on grain, their basis continues to be stronger, but places like the Dakotas still have a wider basis in general, and everybody's situation is a little bit unique and different. But it just proves to the point how the markets can change so quickly on a headline or on a sentiment that even though you're still busy wrapping up harvest, please, please, please keep an eye on these markets, because they are just moving dramatically on all of these headlines and market perceptions right now.
I have a question on basis in the West, because soybean basis is pretty easy to peg as wide because they aren't moving soybeans to China. The United States simply is not. Those would go out the PNW. What does corn basis tell you about the size of the crop out there, if anything?
In the Dakotas, they have not struggled with southern rust in the corn crop. So we are hearing that their corn yields are coming in average. No one is really saying exceptional. No one seems to be complaining that it's worse, but they're seeing that their basis is still historically wide on corn, similar to like it is soybean. So that is telling us that there is enough product available for now at harvest time. And of course, as the final bits of harvest are coming to town, the basis probably has the ability to stay wider as harvest wraps up.
Hey, thank you much. We'll talk with you again next week.
All right. Thank you.
That's Naomi Bloom. She is with TotalFarmMarketing.com. We're now joined by Brittany Goodrich. She's part of the Farm Dog team, an agricultural economist on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, a member of the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. Thank you, Brittany, for being with us. You've been following along and have written an article for the Farm Doc Daily website, and people can search that out under your name, authors, Brittany Goodrich. But this one is about something a little unique. It is a beekeeping crop insurance program subsidized by the United States Department of Agriculture. Can you tell me a little bit about it, please?
Yeah, of course. So just a little bit of background. So obviously we know that, traditional crop producers, corn and soybean growers have had crop insurance going back until the 1980s and even before that. And so in relatively recent years, USDA has made an effort to provide federally subsidized crop insurance programs for livestock operations. And people will think it sounds a little weird that I'm calling beekeeping operations livestock operations. But essentially, most of the honeybee colonies in the U.S., are managed by very large commercial operations that effectively, raise these bees as livestock and produce honey or provide pollination services to crop growers. And so this is, USDA's effort to provide some risk management for beekeeping operations. And so this is called an it's called the Apiculture Rainfall Index Insurance Program. The idea behind the program is that when there is lower than average rainfall, that means that flowers are fewer flowers are blooming, which means less nectar and pollen for honeybee colonies. So what that means on the producer side is less honey production. And in some cases, if you know the drought is severe enough, the beekeeper will actually have to pay for some sugar syrup or some other food substitutes to actually feed the colonies. And because otherwise they would naturally eat the honey production, but if they've made no honey, there's nothing for them to eat. And so beekeepers have to feed them to keep them alive. And this is not a perfect substitute for honey. Honey is much more nutritious than some of these artificial food substitutes. And so then beekeepers can have higher colony losses or other adverse effects from lower than average rainfall. So this is essentially meant to insure against lower than average rainfall and the corresponding revenue and cost implications for beekeeping operations that would come from that.
Let's start with a couple of facts related to beekeeping in this nation and also related to the ability to enroll, I suppose. How many bee colonies are there in the United States, and how many in the state of Illinois?
Oh, this is a good question. So there's roughly in the United States, there's roughly about, I think the numbers are 2.8 million colonies in the United States total. In Illinois, according to USDA, the most recent numbers we have are from 2023, are around 11,000 colonies total in Illinois. And so here in Illinois, we have relatively low enrollment in this program. So only in 2025, only about 600 colonies were actually enrolled in apiculture insurance, which is a very small percentage. I think it's, you know, somewhere around 2% of colonies were actually enrolled in this, you know, federal crop insurance program in 2025. So there's a lot of room for expansion here in Illinois for folks to enroll in this risk management program.
So what do you have to do in order to qualify?
So you have to, you know, keep bees, obviously. And what's great about this program is you could enroll as few as one colonies if you wanted to go around and mess with all the paperwork to enroll one colony in the program. So it is good for small beekeepers. The caveat to that is, you know, to qualify for the crop insurance subsidy, you do need to have a USDA FSA, so Farm Service Agency farm number. So that may discourage some very small hobby beekeepers from participating in the program. But you know, if you are a large enough operation and or maybe you have, you know, you're a big grain producing operation, but you have a few colonies on the side, you could certainly qualify and enroll as few as one of your colonies in this program.
Okay, I'll jump down to the summary of this because you say that this isn't sufficient risk management on its own. I'm wondering what kinds of other practices there might be. And then for those who want to know more, they can either visit the website farmdocdaily.illinois.edu and search out you as the author, Brittany Goodrich, or they can join us on Thursday morning of this week at 11 o'clock for a full webinar on it. So tell me about first some of the why this isn't enough, and then about the webinar that you have coming up on Thursday.
Yeah, so certainly this is not, I mean, I think any, you know, traditional crop grower knows that crop insurance on its own is not a sufficient risk management strategy, especially this product in terms of beekeeping. It only protects against losses from lower than average rainfall. So there's a lot of other things that can go on in a beekeeping operation. I mean, operations are impacted by temperature, as well as a number of other pests and diseases that may or may not be affected by rainfall. And so other risk management practices that beekeepers need to be thinking about are obviously, managing your colonies well. I think it's a common misconception, but it's actually very labor intensive to keep bee colonies. So looking at your varroa mite loads in your colony to make sure that they're not growing too much, diversifying your apiary or your bee locations is another good way. So if you, don't get enough rain in one area, you may get a sufficient amount in another. The opposite could be said for too much rainfall, which this product does not cover against. And so bees have a really hard time flying when it's raining, thunderstorming. And so if you diversify your apiary locations, that's another good way to kind of ensure that you're going to get some honey production, somewhere. So those are all strategies that you can take. And like you said, Todd, I am doing a webinar on this product, and we're going to get more into, there's a lot of different decisions that have to be made for this beekeeping insurance product, including beekeepers have to ensure, they have to choose the months of the year when they want to insure against lower than average rainfall. And so on Thursday at 11 Central Time, I'll be doing a webinar on this product, and we'll dive more into the specifics of all of the different choices that you have to make for this insurance product, including how to go about making those decisions about the time of year the time period during the year when you should think about insuring. But folks that are interested can either join this webinar, FarmDoc webinar. If you go to the FarmDoc website and click on webinars, you can find it linked there. You can find more information on the FarmDoc daily article that I had. And this insurance product does have to be purchased by or from a USDA crop insurance agent. So you can also, there's a few other resources linked in the FarmDoc daily article, and we'll talk about it in the webinar that you can go to look into this product further.
Brittany Goodrich, of course, is an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, a member of the FarmDoc team. We've been talking about managing risk in beekeeping and understanding the Apiculture Rainfall Index Insurance Program. The webinar is at 11 a.m., as she said, on Thursday morning. It's free to register for. You can find both the webinar and the article on the FarmDoc Daily website. The webinar is under the webinars events, and look under authors for Brittany Goodrich to find the article. Let's turn our attention now to the weather forecast. Don Day is here. He's from Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Don, this week I'd like to start with Hurricane Melissa. It is an enormous storm system. By comparison, how big is it to others we've seen?
Well, in terms of size, it's not that remarkable. We've seen larger hurricanes in terms of width and breadth. But in terms of intensity, and this system has achieved 185 mile per hour wind gusts and is plowing through Jamaica right now, it's certainly the biggest hurricane, strongest hurricane of the season to date. We had a situation which was just ripe down in that part of the world for this to come together here at the tail end of hurricane season. you haven't heard about any tropical storm or hurricane activity in this part of the world all season. And that's one reason why Melissa had so much warm water and the right conditions to work with. Because a lot of times, if there's been a tropical storm or hurricane in that particular area, it tends to cool the waters, kind of make things harder for the next one to come in. So it was the perfect storm, so to speak.
What does the track look like after it passes through and over Jamaica?
So as it clips the western parts of Jamaica here over the coming hours, it's going to be picking up speed and moving north, then north-northeast, and will gain forward momentum. But it's going to, after dumping 20 to 30 inches of rain in parts of Jamaica, it's going to drop upwards to 12 to 20 inches of rain across parts of eastern Cuba, maybe catching western areas of Haiti, before rapidly heading out into the Atlantic here by Thursday and Friday. But for the next 12 to 24 hours, it's going to be a very impactful hurricane for those areas.
Certainly not much of an impact, I guess, on the East Coast. You can tell me about that and by its distance, very little here in my part of the world?
Yeah, we're going to see some elevated sea state. I mean, you're going to have some more wave action on along the coast of Florida and parts of the southeastern United States. But the way the system is going to curve to the northeast and move out to sea rapidly, it'll eventually run into some cold water and fall apart. So mainland U.S. really is going to have bigger impacts from a nor'easter right now that's bringing heavy wave action and some stormy weather to the northeast.
Here in Illinois, we're getting a little rainfall today. That came across the Corn Belt. Can you tell me about it?
Yeah, we've got a storm system that came out of the Rockies and is taking a route that is going to take the heavier moisture into the southern areas, Missouri, southern Illinois, southern Indiana, into Kentucky, into Arkansas, and then into Tennessee. We also have an area of rain that stretches north-south from Minnesota through a good part of Iowa and part of northwestern areas of Illinois. We're going to see that moisture slide eastward into the southeastern areas of the United States, where actually they could use it in the Carolinas and parts of the Mid-Atlantic that have actually been a little bit dry this fall.
Turn your attention to South America now. How are things progressing from your perspective in both Argentina and to Brazil?
Well, it's been warmer and drier over the last several weeks down there, but over the next 10 days, we're going to see an increase in rain. This is especially true across Brazil. This will coincide with some cooler temperatures as well. The coldest temperatures will be in Argentina. Argentina is not going to do as well with the rain. Some of the northern areas will pick up rain, but a lot of the key growing areas of southern Brazil are looking at the best rain they've seen in weeks.
Hey, thanks much. I appreciate it, and we'll talk with you again next week.
Sounds good.
Don Day is with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Media. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.